Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest this morning is number one New York Times bestselling author Elizabeth George, who's out with her 20th Lindley novel, The Punishment She Deserves. It's available now from Viking. This book takes us to the lovely little town of Ludlow in Shropshire, England. Its most respected resident, the Church of England deacon Ian Druitt, is accused of child molestation, and while in the unmanned Ludlow police station, Druitt hanged himself. Druitt's influential father does not believe it was suicide, so he demands a second opinion. New Scotland Yard detectives Thomas Lindley and Detective Sergeant Barbara Havers head from London to investigate. It's not quite that simple, but I've tried to summarize it. Elizabeth, describe the town of Ludlow.
Yeah, nice job summarizing it. Ludlow is a wonderful town in Shropshire, not too far from the border with Wales, and it has a medieval significance in that it is a town that has a wonderful old castle sitting on the top of the hill. The castle has been occupied over the centuries. Now it's a ruin, of course, but over the centuries it was occupied by various branches of the Plantagenet family. A medieval city like this has 500 listed buildings, and a great many of them are in their original medieval state, exterior-wise. So it's a hugely atmospheric place.
The title of the book, The Punishment She Deserves, is just about as mysterious as the actual story itself. The pronoun she could refer to several different people. How did that title come about?
Well, it came about through thinking of what was actually going on in the book. And usually when I'm doing a title, the title grows out of one word. It usually comes from a main thing that's happening. And in this instance, when you think about it, all of the characters in the book, all the female characters, do face some form of punishment, whether it is poetic punishment, whether it is psychological, whether it is actual physical. And so the more I thought about it, the more I thought that it was the appropriate title, considering the things that are going on in the book.
Well, initially in the book, Lindley is a distant character in the plot, but as the events unfold, he emerges as a main player. Why did you wait to bring Lindley in for a while in this case?
Because one of the main things that have been going on in all of the novels is this ongoing conflict between Barbara Havers and her superior officer, Isabel Ardrey, as well as Isabel's superior officer, David Hillier. And a few books ago, Barbara was faced with a situation in which she committed a grievous offense against police work and against New Scotland Yard, in that she became an informant for the newspapers in order to get a story in the paper that would embarrass Scotland Yard enough to take action. And then she took herself off to Italy without leave to do so. So she's been in big trouble for a long time. Hillier sees this as an opportunity, this particular case up in Shropshire, to put Isabel and Barbara together in the hope that Barbara will do something that will allow them to ship her off to Berwick-upon-Tweed, which is where they wanted to send her for several books now.
In this book, you talk about the pedophilia with Ian Druitt, the deacon in the Church of England. The clerical pedophilia scandal in the United States and worldwide, particularly in the Catholic Church, has been well documented. I know the Church of England had its own version of the scandal. Have you noticed any comparisons or contrasts between the American response and the British response?
It seems like the American response has been much more broadly publicized than the British response has been. I wasn't really aware in all the times that I'd been to England that there was this scandal going on, as well as what's going on in the United States. So I think that United States has been perhaps a little bit more aggressive in their approach and in bringing the priests and the whole Catholic Church to some form of justice.
It's hard to believe these Lindley novels are written by an American. If you didn't know, I don't think you could tell. You're born in Ohio, you're raised in San Francisco, you live in Washington State. When did you become this Anglophile?
probably in the early 60s. It was I was a young teenager in 1963 when the Beatles came over to the United States, and that was a period of time when everything that related to pop culture was British. I went to England the first time in 1966, and what really fell in love with it was fascinated by it, and so it's been a love affair with England ever since.
It seems like as the novels have unfolded, Lindley has really remained true over the past 30 years to his basically compassionate self. That's probably his overriding characteristic. But he's only aged about 8 years in the series. How has he aged in your own mind?
Well, that's about right. You know, when I decided to do a series in which the characters grow, change, and develop instead of just freezing them in time, I didn't really take into consideration the fact that technology was going to make these vast leaps and bounds. And so I decided two things. First of all, I could not age Lindley as fast as I myself was aging, because he would soon be, you know, retirement age. And so I decided that while Lindley would grow slowly in age, that the books would keep pace with technology, and that made my job a little bit easier to do. It's really a decision based upon how the characters' individual stories fit into the theme of a book, and so I always consider how a character is going to appear in the book and whether thematically the advancement of that character's story is going to match up with the theme of the book.
Throughout the book, both the narrative and the dialogue capture the nuances of the English language as it's spoken in England as opposed to the United States. The cell phone is the mobile. The word program is spelled with an M-E at the end, things like that. After writing the series over the past 30 years, has that British syntax crept into your day-to-day vocabulary off the page?
Some of it has, yes. I found myself always referring to takeout food now as takeaway food, and you know, subtle things like that. Syntax-wise, a little bit, but I pick up their syntax more when I'm actually in England and am just sort of unconsciously speaking the way they do with the way they structure their sentences. That hasn't changed here in the United States. But individual words, yes. I will sometimes actually forget what the American version is of the word that I'm looking for.
Have your vacations now become holidays?
Yeah, actually, they have, come to think of it.
When you're doing this, I think you watch British TV to kind of pick up on how the language changes, because, you know, language of 20 years ago on television in America isn't the same as it is now, right?
Right.
So as you...
Yeah, I do. Go ahead.
Well, and does British TV do a good job capturing that, as far as you can tell from what you hear from your British readers?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll hear... Usually it's a particular word that I'll hear, and I'll realize, oh, I haven't used that word yet, or that was a word I wasn't familiar with in particularly police use. For example, the word dodgy. I remember hearing it for the first time watching Prime Suspect, I think, with Helen Mirren, and sort of making a mental note that was a word that I had not yet used and that I hadn't heard used yet.
You came of age in California, the heart of the Cultural Revolution of the 60s. What effect did that time and place have on your development as a person?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, the most significant thing I think that it gave to me culturally was to really direct my interest towards things British, not only in the world of pop culture, but also in the world of literature too. And I think also growing up in California during the time of the Vietnam War and watching the Vietnam War protests, since I was a little bit too young to go take part in them, that had a significant impact on me as far as understanding the force that the individual actually does have, the power that the individual does have grouped with other individuals to make change.
Did England ever have a similar cultural revolution about the same time or any time near that era?
Did England? No, I think that most of the changes that have come about in England have come about slowly and have had a lot to do with the European Union, which began they began unifying through economics and then ultimately through the lowering of the borders as well. And I think that had made a huge change in England. That was a little bit later than the change that we went through in the United States.
I know you talk pretty openly about the depression that you've suffered in your life. And when did those dark clouds start looming for you?
Oh, I started experiencing depression when I was about 14 years old. And what I found that really helped with my depression was writing. And I had always written, but I really didn't see it initially, how I felt better when I was writing. And but ultimately I did, and that's why it's one of the reasons why I pursued it. Certainly not the only reason why I pursued it, but I found that it lifted. I learned from a psychiatrist that basically the kind of brain I have, it has a tendency to slide toward depression if my brain's in what he would call a resting state. And he said that everybody has attractors in their brains, and my brain happens to be attracted toward depression. And so it was sort of like going down a spiral, a greased spiral is the best way to describe it. And so what he said to me was, it's really important for you to keep your brain active and to stay as creative as you possibly can. So I found that between books, I had to do something to keep myself occupied brain-wise, to keep myself creative. And so I took up various things that would occupy my brain until I was ready to write another book again.
Did you reach the end of therapy? I mean, when you achieve maximum benefits, or is it an ongoing thing?
No, I have not been in a while, but that's a good way to put it. When I reached maximum benefits, I think that that now I have enough tools that I can fight off depression and certainly understand it when it's coming so that I know what to do.
All right. Well, I know that this book is going to keep people entertained in this springtime now. It's The Punishment She Deserves. It's the latest Lindley novel from Elizabeth George. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. My good folks at Viking, you can pick it up in electronic format and in the old-fashioned hardcover like I have here. Elizabeth, just a fantastic offering. Thanks for sharing it with us, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.